Welcome to Cyber Therapy. My name is Ashley Lee, Senior Marketing Manager at Jupiter One. If this is your first time with us, welcome. I have my host here, Tyler Shields. You want to say hi?
Hello, everybody. Good to see you again, Tyler Shields, CMO, Jupiter One. I love the new jersey look, Ash. Show us, stand up. Show us what that jersey looks like.
It's yes. Like I got legit. Mine back here. Amazing. Ta-da. Even got my last
You got to love the swag we do at J1. It's pretty epic swag, I got to say.
Yes, definitely. There's a sense of pride that comes with wearing like legit swag from a company you love and everybody works well. And it's just awesome.
Facts.
Really gets me pumped. So, yeah. How have you been doing with like the hurricane and all that jazz these days? It's been kind of crazy, right?
Yeah, you're safe in the middle of those flyover states. And then us coastal states, we get hammered with hurricanes and rain and lightning. No, the up here in central North Carolina wasn't too bad. I'm sure the coast got hit pretty hard. And obviously Florida and South Carolina got railed. But where we were, we had a little, I personally had a little bit of a power blip for just a minute or two. My brother, who lives 15 minutes up the road, was out for about 15 hours. Yeah. I've heard people being out for maybe a day, but that's the worst I've heard. So not too bad for us. We had it relatively easy.
Well, glad that you're safe and healthy.
Yes.
So, yep. Literally the most weather we've gotten is we just got a bucket of rain yesterday, and that's been about it. So my Xeriscape front lawn is doing fantastic, and it's set up to take minimal water.
You're about a month away from snow anyways, aren't you, out there in Denver?
Yes, I'm actually rather excited. So hopefully it's a good snow season. My ankle is on the mend, so we are getting geared up and ready to go. So,
all right.
Speaking of skiing, actually, our guest is from a state that has also really good skiing, from Idaho. So I'd love to welcome Eric DeShetler from Solidigm. He's a network security architect. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Ashley. Hey, Tyler.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So one of the things that we talked about on our prep call is we are both Bay Area natives who have left the Bay Area. So wanted to just kind of poke and see what made you leave the Bay Area.
You know, I love the Bay, but one of the main reasons I left is that my house in California was, well, the lot was 26 feet wide, right? And that's the entire lot. And so I, for the same price, I traded that way up north for 5 acres. And one kind of one big plus, right? But mainly because I just love the outdoors and, you know, the seasons. And so I was really looking forward to getting back. I've lived here before, so I was looking forward to here.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I'm similar in that we left the Bay Area to go to Ohio because my husband was going to grad school there. So after he finished grad school, he gave me the option to take us to our next destination. And I basically chose Colorado or California. And let his job kind of figure that out. And we landed in Colorado where we get snow, the white snow and white winter that I was hoping for when we were in Ohio. Because when we were in Ohio, mm-hmm. it was literally just ice storms. So, yeah, Tyler, you were in the Silicon Valley too, right?
Yeah, all three of us turns out were Bay Area people. I was never a native. I was there for 4 years, but I did my 4 years and got out of Dodge when the dot-com collapse occurred in 2000, 2001 timeframe. Bailed out and have been in North Carolina for 22 years.
Wow, that's a long time. I can't imagine being in one place for that long, but who knows? Maybe this will be it for me.
I mean, we're in different houses, different towns, but we've been in North Carolina for 22 years.
Crazy, crazy town. All right, well, let's dig in. I think first question that I have for you, Eric, is how do you describe your job to people? Like, what do you do as a network security architect?
All right, so how I describe it, it's just like any other architect, right? You build stuff, but it's a little bit different in cyber because what happens a lot with architects is like, imagine if an architect built houses, if they saw a grassy field and they were like, hey, I think there should be a house there. Right, and they built a house there, and then it's like, okay, who's going to own this house now, right? That kind of thing. That's what we tend to do in cyber. Like, we'll start building right away as soon as we get on the job. And I really think that my job is to listen to the needs of my internal customers, figure out what, like, how I can help them do their job, right, and meet their needs and build that for them, right? So that's how I would describe it in a nutshell. Yeah.
And let's see, you've had stints at NASA as well as NSA and worked at some pretty cool places. How have those roles helped prepare you for the one that you're in now? Because an architect
Definitely.
is not like an entry-level job, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
So.
it say it's not an entry-level job. You want to have some background, right? And I guess my background would be in systems integration. And but you know, my experience at the NSA and at NASA really helped me get real-world hands-on experience, right? So I spent a lot of time hacking into systems, and then spent a lot of time, several years, defending systems that were being hacked, right? Like, you know, obviously at NASA, a big target. And so that real world experience, it was great because, you know, as things happen now, as breaches happen, it's not too terrifying. It's all usually stuff I've kind of seen before. And so I will be definitely not be, you know, running around screaming that the sky is falling when there's a breach, but you know, it's just good experience, I think, right? To be on both sides of the fence.
So Eric,
So as an art,
let
go
me
ahead.
ask you a question about that.
Go
Let me
for it.
ask you a
Yeah.
little bit about what's the difference between breaker and builder? And you mentioned that you did a lot of breaking earlier in your career, and you're doing building later in your career, right? In this new phase of your career. What have you learned from the breaker side that has helped you become better, stronger, more empathetic, all of those things for the builder side of your career?
Yeah, so you know, I started off breaking things, right? And you don't have to have any knowledge of how to secure systems when you're hacking into them, right? You might pick that up as you go, but you don't really, because you're essentially just trying to break all of the rules, right? You're running exploits and you're putting files where they don't belong, hoping that they don't get discovered, and you're doing things that are non-conventional, right? When you're defending networks, you really have to follow playbooks, right? Because everybody else has to be able to work with you as a team in order to, you know, keep that business alive, right? Especially during a breach, we all have to work as a team. And as a breaker, you can kind of go solo, and then you either have success or you don't, right? And if you're successful, you could pass it on to somebody else and be like, hey, I exploited this system. Go ahead, here are the keys to the kingdom. Go for it. You can't do that on the defense side.
Do you think in your experience, it's a two-prong question. Do you think one was more fun than the other for you personally? Well, just at a personal opinion level. And then do you think one was more difficult to master? And I know we never master our craft. We always learn. But, you know, difficult to get good at, to feel like you were good at.
I think they were both equal, right? I think what really matters is like how high are the stakes? And I like the kind of high stakes roles, right? Where if you mess up, something bad is probably going to happen, right? And so, you know, it's, for me, it was high stakes at both sites. I felt when I was at NASA's Security Operations Center, I really felt like, you know, if I don't pay attention, if I'm not diligent, I'm going to miss something big, right? And the same way at the NSA, like if I mess up, then this might be on the news, you know? And so, they're both equally hard, right? Because it comes down to tradecraft, like how good are you at your trade, right? Whatever it is, you can never master it fully, but definitely.
Always learning.
Which one did you
Curious.
enjoy?
Yeah.
Hang on, which one did you enjoy
Yeah,
more?
I definitely enjoyed the offensive stuff for, you know, I enjoyed it, but I think you will burn out from that faster. So I did it for 4 years, and it was like sometimes it was like, you know, I might not leave that building for like 3 or 4 days, right? We're in the middle of something, and you're just
Wow.
nonstop. Yeah, or at least like you know, maybe 12, 16 hours. So it was fun, but yeah, I really enjoyed it, definitely.
For what it's worth, I agree completely. I did the breaker thing for about 8 years, 8 or 9 years of my career. So definitely get that. Now, I never truly acted as a technology builder in the traditional sense. I've acted since then as a business builder. But that's a totally different muscle. But Ashley, go ahead. I'm interrupting you multiple times here.
No worries. I wanted to circle back to something you said at the beginning when you were describing your role as a network security architect. What does a typical, you said you want to listen to your internal customers. So the first 30, 60, 90 days when you're starting a new job, right? What does that typically look for? What questions are you trying to suss out in, like, basically, how do you get your lay of the land that you're walking into?
Definitely. So, you know, as an architect, you're more focused on structural awareness as opposed to situational awareness, right? So I'm not really too concerned over if there's a breach or what's being breached or that, or monitoring the logs specifically. I need to know how things are built, right? So I spent my first 30 days getting an understanding of how things were built, right? And you start by asking people, of course, but you really have to verify it yourself, right? You have to log into these systems, to, you know, cloud consoles, right? And go and check things out, because you're going to find that it doesn't always line up to what people tell you. It's not that they're trying to mislead you. It's just that they heard it from someone else, right? It's changed since then. There's a lot of different people working on these systems. And so they, you know, they shift, right? So you have to verify it yourself. That was the first 30 days. You asked about 16 and 90 days, right? Then what I'll do is, all right, so if you've been in, you know, tech for a longer amount of time, let's say, like, you know, more than 10 years or 15 years, you know, you start to see the same patterns, right? Really not much has changed in terms of, like, networking and the way systems are built over the last 20 years. There's been different layers of abstractions, but you start to see patterns and understand things. And then what you want to do is start to share that with other people. So, like, there's many other architects on my team, and they have been focused on one domain. I'm focused on a particular domain, like network security. And so I want to share what I know with them, so that way they've got a bigger view of the environment. That's 60 days. By the time you get to 90 days, you probably need to start fixing things or working on projects and stuff like that. You've got to deliver something, right? And there's always almost, you can always figure out what's the most important thing that needs to be done. What does the business need to drive their agenda forward, right? And for me being at a startup, because you know, Solidigm is a startup, there are things that we have to do to basically establish ourselves as a business, right? And so any work I do around that is going to be not going to be pushed back on by anyone else. It's going to, you know, drive the business forward. So yeah, that's 30, 60, 90.
Cool. Thanks for that. Tyler, you got a question? You look like you're about to go for it.
Yes, and of course I struggle. I struggle with the mute button because, you know, I don't know how to hit M on my keyboard. I'm going to interrupt real quickly and say I want to do a shout out to Valerie Apperson, who gave us a nice little comment here on YouTube. Thank you, Valerie, for the killer comment. We like to recognize the folks that make nice comments. And I guess we can even recognize those folks that make mean comments. But hey, Valerie, hey, shout out to you. So go ahead, Ash.
So you said a little bit about structural awareness and situational awareness. And then now that's something that I've picked up from the Cyber Defense Matrix. So I'm assuming that you are a fan of Sunil's Cyber Defense Matrix. You want to dive a little bit further into how you're using that, operationalizing it in your organization today? This is more curiosity than anything.
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely my favorite book that I've read so far this year. I've got two favorite books that I've read this year, and I love to do a lot of reading, right? So anything that, you know, someone recommends to me, pick it up and read it. And so, you know, it's important to distinguish between structural awareness and situational awareness, right? Like, it's really comes down to who, what, where, why, and when, right? And so structural awareness is just knowing how the relationships between things, how they're built. So imagine, like, I'll take an example from the book, right? A firefighter going into a building is going to need to know kind of like what the building is made out of, right? Is it steel? Is it wood? Is it, you know, how many floors are there, right? If he's going to go up the staircase, he better know how many floors he's going up to. You might be operating with lights out, that kind of thing. So you're gonna have to feel your way around. That's super important to know the structural awareness. Example might be, let's say I'm working on a firewall, right? And I make a change and I lock myself out. Now I can't manage that firewall. What's my other way into that firewall, right? Maybe it's through the cloud. So I log into the cloud portal and log into it. Well, how is that all set up? Or is there like some kind of out of band communications, right? That's just one example, right? So when things break, if you know the structure, you can fix it. If you don't know the structure, then you're going to, you know, just like this wall behind me right here, it's probably been unfixed for like, you know, 20 years. That's what you're going to end up with, right? So
you intentionally brought that wall to this discussion.
I did. Yep. I have sledgehammers over there. Yep. Exactly.
That's fantastic. I totally agree with you, by the way, right? Like structure and meat around what you have and details and specific understanding of the universe around the incident, the attack, the vulnerability, or the issue provides the context that allows you to execute your day-to-day work better, faster, stronger, smoother, right? And without that context, you're kind of operating in a bit of a almost like a black hole in some ways.
And you know, in security, there's so many people, especially if they're younger in their career, right? They really want to find breaches, right? They want to look at logs all day, and they want to find, and they will, and I'm happy for them. For me, like, I don't really want to do that as much anymore. If I know something happened, I'll go dig into logs and stuff, but or PCAPs, whatever. I love looking at PCAPs. That's true. I will do that all day. But for the most part, I want to build, you know, a good system, right? I want to build something that people like to use, that's robust, that is going to stand up to the internet, right? And it's, for me, that's fun right now.
Yeah, and as Valerie says, like understanding things like blast radius, understanding the context around the attack to understand the breadth of the risk at hand, right? And I think the cyber defense matrix does a great job of helping compartmentalize the different chunks from discovery to, and I don't remember all of them, you might, because I think you studied it closer than I have, but certainly the discovery to the enumeration to the remediation to the detection, right? The different chunks of the matrix. You know, it kind of has, it's a great framework to help you to understand the life cycle of that kind of situation, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. The only thing I think it's missing, right, is, you know, a second book, right? A second volume, how to make friends and influence people with the cyber defense matrix, right? Because that's one thing
I found.
That's a great title. Yeah, exactly. Right. Is that, you know, again, another quote from the book is that like all maps or all frameworks are misleading. Some are useful, right? And, you know, reality is never the same as a matrix, right? But the matrix is very useful for talking about things, right? And getting people on the same page. But like my coworkers, they don't want to be boxed into a bubble, and they don't want me to force them to talk about one issue. A lot of times I'll notice that. Right. So anyways, I'll have to figure that out unless you guys publish another book.
Shout out to Sunil. Hint, hint. Exactly. Nudge, nudge for the next book.
So actually, while we have a second, I think I'm lagging. Can you hear me okay? There we go. I think we were lagging for a second there. But real quickly, I want to bring up an image of the author of the Cyber Defense Matrix. You mentioned, Eric, you mentioned specifically the Matrix. Right, you gave me a Matrix reference in there, nice. So we'll just bring up this image real quickly if our system decides to work.
There you go.
At any level. There it is. There is the author of the book.
In
there
suit.
He is directly, yes. And I want to make this a formal shout out to Sunil to write version 2 of that book as soon as humanly possible.
Cyber Defense Matrix Reloaded.
The how to influence people in the Matrix. I like it.
That's good too. Yep.
Yeah.
There you go.
Okay. So speaking of influencing people, you said that there's, you're listening for needs. How do you get to a place where you've clearly defined the need and the problem that you're trying to solve? Because it's so easy to get distracted by all the problems that are there. So How do you go about sussing out the needs and drilling down to the specific problem that you're wanting to solve?
Yeah, that's a good question. So that really has to happen in meetings, right? And the reason it has to happen in meetings is because there's going to be a lot of conflict in that process, right? And conflict has to live in meetings, right? You don't want to, if you notice, like, if you text someone if you deal with a conflict over SMS, it's a lot different than if you deal with a conflict over the phone, right? Like,
Yes.
yeah. And so you want to know that you have the trust with your coworkers to have conflict, right? If there's no conflict in meetings, it means you either don't have the trust, so you guys can't really work together well, or like people don't feel empowered to bring it up or something like that. There's some other like base issue, right? So you get in a meeting, you find out what their needs are, and in their minds, they have some kind of concept of how things should work, right? And so you that concept to light, and you give all the other stakeholders a chance to say, well, no, actually, I think it should work a different way, right? And once you've done that, you're either going to come up with the right solution, or you're all going to be wrong together, and that's not that bad either. So
How
that's my
do you
approach.
prevent it from devolving into like, let's just shit all over this problem, but not like have any stake in taking care of it? Because that's very easy to do that, right?
Okay, so
Hey,
I'm
Ashley,
gonna
we're on a family show here. We're on
I'm
a family show.
sorry.
That's true.
We'll bleep it out
Okay.
in post. Tyler
You
Peterson
just
in
bleep
the
that
chat.
in post, TP. Make sure you bleep that in post, super producer.
So you just reminded me like another book, right? And it's called Get Stuff Done, right? But it's not stuff, right? So anyways, you use the one cuss word, you know, like in a Marvel film, they're like allowed to say the F word one time and that's
Yes.
it. And so it's PG-13, right? So you use that, so I can't use it now. But
Sorry.
basically, first of all, the only way you're gonna come up with something good is if somebody takes ownership of what's happening, right? And so things I'll do, right? If anyone ever complains about something not working or not being secure or not being the way it's supposed to be, I don't know if this is, I'm not sure if this is good advice, right? But I'm going to tell you. My response is always, hey, you're absolutely right. Let me know when you've got 4 hours. I'll schedule a working session and you and I are going to go fix this like this week, right? And then like all of a sudden everyone's quiet. No one's complaining anymore, right? That kind of thing. So you got to find, my point is you got to find who's going to actually take ownership of this issue, right? Or the project or the thing that you're trying to build. A lot of people just want to rent it, right? And so you need to find someone who's going to own it and be responsible for the outcomes, right? And those people are very motivated to have your help in designing a good solution and building it and all the other steps.
Awesome. Thank you for that. How do you know when you've actually like distilled, like, is there a threshold in your head when you've known you've defined the problem clearly enough for people to actually then build a solution for it? Or is that just something like you learn from practice and from experience?
You want to scope things down as small as you possibly can, right? And what we call it like MVP, right? Minimum viable product. You want to scope down the problem and really figure it out. I don't know if there's a way to know if you've done a good job on that. Like you've got to keep iterating back over it. You see what needs it's not meeting, and then you go and build it out more. But it's just like, okay. If you think about technology, how many times is technology purchased without really understanding if it's going to meet the needs that the people are purchasing it for, right? It's like if you even do some kind of rationalization, then at least you've done that and you're going to solve a problem. And same thing with like finding needs. If you've even rationalized that a little bit, you're probably doing a pretty good job. Because a lot of times people will just build without really understanding any need at all, and it becomes shelfware, right?
Or like processes and fields of data that just go unused. I've been there. So as a marketing operator, I understand the let's build it because it's a great idea and like everybody's going to use it and then nobody uses it. It's like very disheartening, I'm not gonna lie. But that's just because, sometimes you got to wait for the need to present itself before you go and build something for it. And then that way people will eventually adopt it, hopefully. So.
Absolutely. And also let them suffer for a little bit. I hate to say it, but first, like how do you know what the need is until you see what they spend their time on, right? And it's like if they're like, hey, I'm spending 40 hours a week doing this manual work, I'm going into all these different dashboards and pulling these tags off of all these assets and then collating them. It's like, okay, well, we can solve that problem, right? Once I know what you're trying to do.
That's actually a good segue into How do you go about sussing out the gaps in your security program today?
Okay. So there's no shortage of gaps, right? That's one thing that you'll find at any company. And you know, there's no shortage of controls either, right? There's thousands of controls that I have identified that could be put into place or beefed up more, that kind of thing, right? But we've got to, there's major opportunity costs, right? We've got to focus on the important things that drive the business forward. So for me, it's aligning upwards with, you know, like if you're in security, you want to align upwards with IT and with the greater business units. And first, like if you can find out what's going to help our business thrive, make sure you're moving those projects forward first, right? And so one example of that might be like, hey, you just had a acquisition, right? Your company acquired another company. Well, they're all on a separate laptop and they are doing following separate processes, and that's slowing everyone down, right? Because there's all this translation that's happening from the old business to the new business. Like, can you consolidate those systems and get them all working on the same laptop from the same company and using all the same systems, that kind of thing? If you do, you're going to remove complexity, right? And so that's a way of thinking of security is complexity is the enemy of security, right? And so if you remove complexity, even though you haven't built a single security solution, you actually are improving the risk posture of your company by removing complexity, right? So that's, focus on the business. That's what I'd say.
If we could dig a little bit more into that example that you just stated, who are the players to actually roll that thing out? Because that sounds like a very big undertaking for multiple parts of the organization. So curious to know the players and how you would go about actually rolling out something like that.
So if you think back on your career, right, you can probably point out a lot of missed opportunities where you could have done something more significant, but you just didn't feel like you were empowered to do it, right? You're a full-time employee at a company, like you're part of that family. And if like, you don't have to stay in your lane most of the time, right? You can propose, if you got an idea, you can propose a solution for that's going to solve any business problem. And, you're not going to, you might meet some resistance, right? You might, that's fine. But so anyone can solve it, right? And I think it's very important to get out of your lane as much as you can, slightly out of your lane, right? So like, for example, you know, I'm in network security, that's my area of expertise, but I'm going to work on any security project and contribute to it, right? Because there's really not that much difference between like a network project and an identity project, right? The type of work you do is very similar. So yeah, don't wait for someone else to do it. Just bring it up, start it. If you bring up a problem, you kind of own it, right? That's usually what ends up happening. It's like, hey, great idea, Ashley. When can you get started on that?
What are the steps that we need in order to get there?
Yeah.
I'm just curious because it's rolling out like a bunch of laptops to employees who are moving over during the acquisition. You already have like the whatever emotional state people already have feelings about the acquisition, right? Mm-hmm. When there's transition. And then the additional like security policies, the change in the way of working, the culture and all that. It just sounds like a very long, you're going to like lose people along the way. So how do you, I feel like I'm interrogating you. So sorry, but like, I'm really interested, like, how do you roll out a program like that to really take people with you? Cause this is like, not just security rollout or anything like that. It's like, it involves IT. It involves, you probably have HR involved because you got to get like addresses right from everybody for who you need to roll them out to. So, and then how do you just make sure everybody walks with you, right? To adopt.
I'll tell you what I do, right? Because I want to make progress every day on these things, right? I don't want things to drag on for weeks and weeks and weeks. So I have two colors that I use to color code all the meetings on my calendar. All right, it's red and green. Green means this is a good meeting. We're gonna actually work and get stuff done, right? Or if we're just gonna talk about something, then we're gonna make a decision, right? And we're gonna do it in like 20 or 30 minutes, right? Red means that this meeting is kind of a waste of time, right? Like there's no agenda, so no attenda, right? And and then what I'll do is, because what happens to calendars, like, you know, you get double booked and triple booked, and it's very easy for me to, I'll just go to the green meetings, right? And I will ignore the red meetings. And so the way you, my approach then after that, right, is to schedule working sessions. So if we want to get something done, let's block out 3 hours and let's pilot, let's do a test of that, right? Let's actually build it and start it on a small scale, do a pilot project, prove that it works. It's like a proof of concept almost, right? And then we can say, okay, we can build this ourselves. It'll take us 3 months, or we can spend this money. We can hire on these contractors or this additional help. We can get it done in 30 days, right? And let the business kind of decide at that point how they want to approach that or how important it is to them. But, you know, you're giving them options at that point. So projects seem very hard, right? But when it comes down to it, technology, like there's only so many buttons you can click and so many things you can, so many knobs you can turn, right? So you can do a pilot project of a project that would take like 30 days. You could pilot that in 4 hours if you have all the right people who know how to make those changes, right? So I'll call the other engineers, we'll do it.
Little did I know we were going to get calendar management advice on this call today.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I was trying to answer Ashley's question, and I feel like that might be the missing piece that you were looking for, Ashley. I don't know.
Hey, you know, it's interesting. You know, I've been in cyber for 20 plus 25 years, whatever it is now. And I would say the bulk of the more important things I've learned are not necessarily cyber-centric, right? It's not necessarily about the latest zero day or triaging a flaw in a certain way. Many times it's as simple as saying, hey, I'm not doing these meetings. I'm only doing these meetings, and we're going to execute in a direction that makes sense for the security team to make progress every single day. And people don't think of it that way. They always think of, hey, let me get the latest and greatest Vuln or CVE or blah, blah, blah. And many times it's kind of that double click distilled processes on how to just operate on a day-to-day basis that people can learn from.
I agree with that 100%. And I've never been at a company where everyone was like, hey, this company is great. There's hardly any meetings, right? I mean, that's just not how it works. Like, calendars can fill up. So you've got to choose not to go to those meetings. Or like, what better way to do is message the person who invited you and say like, hey, what are you expecting out of me in this meeting? How can I help? I can't tell from the agenda what you want here. So let me know how I can help you, right? And you might be able to turn that meeting into an email.
Mm-hmm. Or you'll just get a download of it later in an async way and be able to contribute that way.
And many times that's plenty. That's plenty good enough. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you'll get out of the way. Like I talk a lot. You don't want me on your meeting if you actually want to get stuff done and you don't want me to do it, right? Because I'll just take up all the air and, you know, other people won't talk. So so then you just
start not getting invited.
Exactly.
Yeah. Hilarious. Okay. Shifting gears a little bit. We are in October, so this is Cybersecurity Awareness Month. And I know I didn't put this in the show notes, but it just popped in my head. What would be a tip or trick or piece of vendor software that you would recommend for the non-security specialists, so the regular, educated, everyday Joe Schmo who's not in security, what would you recommend to them to implement and just be more secure?
Okay, someone who's not in security. Okay, I recently got one of these. Wait, if I find it here on my keys. One of these YubiKeys, right? And I'm going to hold it up there. There you go. And this thing is really cool, right? Because if you think about it, like you already use keys for everything. You've been doing that all your life. You might as well use a key to log into your Gmail account, right? And to log into your bank account and that kind of thing. And so I got one of these keys, and I have a backup key also in case I lose this one. And it's just like so much easier now. I don't have to worry about my email getting hacked or my bank account getting hacked, because that additional factor is on the key. It's not sitting on my laptop necessarily. So it's not, doesn't mean that you're 100% proof, you know, secured by having that, but I think it's a good step in the right direction to get, you know, get a key and use it. But make sure you have a backup.
Yeah,
and that you would probably lose it.
Yeah, and what does that focus on? That focus on the traditional weakest link, passwords, the second weakest link, humans, right? If we can mm-hmm. solve the password and the human problem, we'd probably solve cybersecurity to a much higher degree of risk aversion, right? So mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of the token, or at least biometric, or finding some way to do a second factor above and beyond just that traditional garbage password that never has worked for as long as I've been in cyber.
Absolutely.
What are your thoughts on using just like a Google Authenticator instead of an actual key?
It's better than just a password, right? So
right. Oh, I'm saying like Duo, or like, you know, on your mm-hmm. on your mobile phone, like that would
it's good.
Suffice, right?
Yeah, I think that it would suffice, absolutely. The problem is don't lie, like when you see that pop up, you don't read it, you just click yes, that's me, right? And you get that push notification, right? Now, of course, if it just happened in the middle of the night, you probably wouldn't accept it, right? But if you're working and you go to log in, then you know, when you get that push note, you're expecting it, so you're going to click yes, right? And that's human mm-hmm. behavior. And that mm-hmm. can be manipulated. And so, you know, I'd say watch out for that, right? But it's still it's better than a password. Yeah.
I think it might just be because I work at a security company. I actually do mm-hmm. read every single time like that notification pops up. Is this you? Where are they logging in from? If it's not where I'm located, then no, it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yes, Aditya, thank you for.
Eric, did you get your key from the Yubico website, or did you get it from Amazon?
Yes, I got it from the Yubico website. Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
And if you look at like the cool thing about it is like
in that chat, Aditya,
it's tiny.
There you go.
Yeah. Yep.
Exactly. Is that the version 5?
Yeah, it's the latest one. It's got a USB-C port and a Lightning port on it, right, for your iPhone.
Yeah.
So
that's
yeah,
the version
once that
5.
Plugs in your iPhone, yeah, that's a good one to go with, I think.
Cool. Adding more folks mm-hmm. to the band of YubiKey owners. So
definitely.
Cool. All right. I think we're going to be wrapping up our interview section shortly. There's a couple questions that I had left. And this is more for greasing, helping folks who are technical, right? Be able to grease or build relationships so that everybody can work together as a team. What would be your one or two tips, your go-to like way of interacting with folks, how to win friends and influence people, right?
Yeah.
To really build strong relationships so that when you're in crunch time, like you already have the social capital built up and you can mm-hmm. go to town and work on whatever you need to work.
Yeah. So no matter what, it's going to be somewhat difficult, right? And it's going to be somewhat uncomfortable to make progress and do important things, right? There's just no way around that. And so there's a lot of things though that we can do to make it easier. For example, I mentioned earlier about how conflict should be in meetings. So that's the first one, right? But then mm-hmm. when that conflict happens, resist the urge to sidebar, right? And like, you know, message, you know, one person, be like, oh, this guy's so dumb. He doesn't know what he's talking about. We already talked about this. You know, like, don't sidebar. Say whatever you need to say, stay in the meeting. And if somebody sidebars you, tell them like, hey, don't sidebar me. Just say it out loud in the meeting, right? And that's very important. It will help build trust. And, you know, so yeah, building trust is really important. And one of the ways you do that is by not sidebarring conversations. And we, you know, I think a lot of us do that very frequently. I did it until I realized that it wasn't helpful. And now I try to make it a point not to do it.
Yeah. I will say that it distracts me actually mm-hmm. from the core of the meeting. So I try, like when I'm in meetings, so Tyler, when I don't answer you for a little while, it's usually because I'm in a meeting talking to people and not paying attention to you. Just letting you know.
All this time, I thought you just didn't like me, Ash. And you know, when I'm sending you back channel messages during our live feeds like this, and you ignore them, now I know you just don't like me. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn your camera on too. That's a good one, right? But I feel like everybody knows that. But it's just funny now. Like you go to the meeting with 30 people, nobody has their camera on. One person turns it on, and then all of a sudden, everyone else starts turning it on. like, you know, it's just
I feel like that's what's interesting is that's very dependent on the type of culture. I've noticed that I feel like the more toxic the culture is in terms of like people don't trust each other, there's a lot of like back channeling and like side conversations during meetings. Those are the ones where there's typically, okay, yeah. Here we go. He's probably messaging you right now. His thoughts on what what I'm saying, you know,
I had but to like, do it. You made it too easy.
I know, but like, it's just, it's interesting because I mean, my best friend, she's not in cybersecurity at all, but she is on a lot of meetings because she's a scientist. She's a data analyst for biotech company, and they never have their cameras on. But then I also hear all her stories of like the conflict and everything like that. I'm just like, oh, how are you surviving there? So,
do you know what the definition of a data scientist is?
I mean, I feel like this is a trick question.
It's just someone who knows more statistics than your average computer scientist, and someone who knows more computer science than your average statistician, however you say that word.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyways, I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
So here's an interesting question for you, Ashley, and you, Eric, as well. And it was brought up Ashley by Valerie Epperson on the feed. You know, she brought up a good point. She said in the UK, they think it's polite to camera off mute when you present or perform. Do you think there's a cultural difference? And it's difficult for people like you and me, Ash, because, you know, 90% of the time we're on US-based calls with US-based people. And I think, have a little bit broader insight into this in the sense that I do a lot of work with Israeli companies as well. But I haven't noticed any difference in Israel. Have you guys seen anything international? Do you have any insights into international cultural differences when it comes to camera on versus camera off, mute versus non-mute?
I mean, I think for me, my standard really is I go into meeting. I make all my Zoom meetings like by default, everybody enters camera off, mute off. So that way they're opting in to have their camera on and to be able to speak. It's a voluntary choice, right? I'm not.
Which is funny because I do the opposite.
Yeah, I noticed.
Honest to God, I do the opposite because I force people to have that openness that comes with being camera on and being engaged and not being disconnected. And, you know, at least if you're going to ignore me, I'm going to see you ignoring me.
So, okay. I've got a different opinion, right? Because let's say you're in a conference room, right? With like 20 people. Okay. And five of those people are just staring at you the whole time. Like you're not even talking, but they're just nonstop staring at you. Right. I'm going to be like, Tyler, why are you staring at me, man? I'm not even talking. Like, what, do I have something on my face? And it's like, you don't know who's looking at you in a virtual meeting, right? But if you're in that same conference room and you were standing up and you're talking, then it would be completely normal for everyone to be staring at you because you're up and you're talking, right? So if you are camera shy, turn it on when you're talking and then turn it off when you're done, right? It's a little weird, to turn your camera on and off, but at least you have it on when you're talking. And I like doing that because, like, you know, I've got like kids and dogs coming up in camera and stuff, and you know, it's like, it's a little too distracting.
Like, if you're getting interrupted by kids and dogs and stuff, absolutely, like, mute it, video off for a minute. Like, if I need to stand up to get another glass of bourbon, I'm gonna turn the video off and go get my glass of bourbon, right? But, you know, I do think it's interesting that it could be a bit of a cultural thing, and I would love if there's any international audience that watches this on our YouTube feeds, our Twitter feeds, our Twitch feeds, our LinkedIn feeds, our whatever feeds, comment down below if it's a cultural thing or if this is just straight up, hey, everybody turns it on or everybody turns it off kind of scenario. It's not something we generally dive into on this show, but when you're talking about how to spread the word of cyber and to get people involved, there's a certain level of you know, cultural impact and empathy for others that you have to be able to embrace to be able to get that word out, even within your team, within your organization, especially if you have a multicultural, multi-international organization. So I definitely think it's an interesting topic that we haven't really approached before. Ashley, we're at 45 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's game time.
They always do when we have great guests like Eric, right? They go by super fast.
It's been fun.
Awesome. All right. Today we are going to do trivia.
Be careful, also, Eric. I'm going to give you fair warning. I am competitive AF. I'm just saying.
And he will steal all your points.
I don't like to lose. Definitely.
You know, but the question is, how much trivia do you remember, right? So
And did Ashley give you the answers ahead of time? Are you saying I'm old and have a shitty memory? That's a good possibility that you might be right in this scenario. But we'll see. Yeah. We'll see how old and bad my memory really is. Although I do have to admit, Ashley sets these games up. Mm-hmm. And in general, her goal is to make me lose.
Okay, cool.
Yes. All right. So I always like it when our guests end on a high note. So.
Uh-huh. All right. Let's try it.
Cool. All right. So this trivia, it's like a mix of astronomy, something about money, something about like countries, random stuff. So the way this will go is, Eric, I will ask you the question first. If you get the answer right, you get the point. And then we move on to the next question, and the next question goes to Tyler. If you get it wrong, Tyler gets a chance to steal. Wow.
Okay.
You got your,
I'm in competitive mode. Yep. You ready?
I hope you have Matrix questions on here, since that was
hilarious. Yeah. Okay. What is the coldest planet in our solar system?
Neptune.
Wow, good job. I didn't know that. Yeah. So
blue.
I totally knew that, but I didn't say anything because I thought he got to go first. Wait, is it first to answer?
No. I gave the question to him first.
Okay.
Yeah. If I got it wrong, it would go to you. Yeah, but next one goes to you. Yep.
I would have gotten that right.
Yeah. Okay. How many, Tyler, this one's for you. Mm-hmm. How many constellations are there?
Seriously? Come on. I get Neptune and I got to count constellations?
You would have said Mercury.
12, actually. There are 12.
Wrong. Eric, you want to steal?
Yeah. 14.
No, there's a lot more than that. There's 88 constellations.
No, I honestly had no
Seriously?
Idea.
Seriously? That's like shot in the dark.
I think.
Mm-hmm. That's all right.
Well, okay.
Like, who defines that? I make up my own constellations all the time, so.
Exactly.
Okay, so there's an infinite number then.
That looks like a poo emoji. We'll call that the poo constellation.
Next thing you're going to tell me, Pluto's not a planet. I don't believe it.
Exactly. Shenanigans. Yeah. All right, Ash, hit it.
All right, Eric, what is the smallest city in the world?
Ooh, smallest city in the world. It must be an island, and... I have no idea. I'm going to pass.
I just love that you actually verbally thought that out to help me.
That's okay.
I still don't have an answer, but thank you for the tip.
Yeah.
let's say some French Polynesian island that ends in a vowel.
Mm-hmm. No.
This is a hard game. Go ahead.
Well, what is it, Ashley? Answer. It's possible.
The answer is Vatican City, Rome.
Oh, derp.
Thinking that. Yeah, that popped in my head. Tyler's typing. I can see it on his glasses. He's Googling these answers.
Yeah. No Googling you. You cheater.
Just kidding.
Well, he wouldn't find it in time anyways.
It's funny because it didn't occur to me about the Vatican City thing, but I totally should have known that.
Yeah.
Well, now you know.
It wasn't an
All
island.
Right, correct. It's not the island. An island. Tyler, this one's for you. The unicorn is the national animal of which country?
Of which what? You broke up.
Country. What country?
Which country?
Yeah.
For real? Like some country out there actually believes that a unicorn exists and they're going to make it a national animal?
Wait, they don't exist? Wow.
I think it's got to be Ireland because they believe in leprechauns too.
Incorrect. Eric, you want to try and steal?
Yes. Yeah, I'm going to go with Uruguay.
No, the answer is Good Scotland. Answer. Tyler, you were close.
Darn. I was super close.
You're so close.
Which makes sense because the Irish have the leprechaun. The Scottish got to have the unicorn. Like, that makes sense.
Yep.
Right next week.
Yep, definitely.
Hilarious. Okay, right now the score is 1-0, Eric.
All right.
So
Neptune.
And we've gone through four questions.
Yeah, that's not fair because he would have got that one. So I have to win legitimately. It's got to be
No. This is competitive mode. You take your point. I'm still coming for you.
Mm-hmm. All right, Eric. This question is for you. What day of the week are ATMs most frequently visited?
Oh, I know that. I know that one. It's a day that ends in Y.
Ah, good one.
What? It's a day that ends in day.
You know, I'm going to say Friday.
Ding, ding, ding. Correct. Yep. You are correct.
All right. Cool. Makes sense to me.
Yes. It makes sense to me too. Yep. All right. Tyler, What is the
Something hard.
average lifespan of a US $1 bill?
Yes.
See how she sets
That's
this
awesome.
game up, Eric? See how she sets these
That's
games up?
exactly what the losing party would say. Go for it.
It's rigged.
Okay. I need you all to look another way for a minute.
Or just take off your glasses.
Let's say 82 years.
Incorrect. You're way off, man.
Yeah.
It is.
Yep.
Oh, actually, Eric,
All
would you
right.
like to steal?
Yeah, it's obviously 10 years.
No, actually,
Ah,
it's
I like
only
your
18
confidence,
months.
though.
18 months?
Yeah, 18
What are
months.
people doing with these dollar bills to make them die so fast? I don't want to know.
I was just gonna say, do you really want to ask that
Yeah,
question?
don't ask those questions. Some questions should not be asked, Eric.
Yeah. Okay.
Righty, Eric,
Yes.
question for you. What is the hashtag symbol technically called?
Ah.
Okay. So the hashtag symbol was originally, before it was a hashtag, it was called pound. But that's what I'm going to go with, pound.
Right.
Yep.
He's right.
That is incorrect. I mean, that is another
What?
name, but that's
There, yeah,
not
there's
what it's
another name for it
technically
that
called.
predates that. Go for it, Tyler. You
Yes.
got this.
You're
This is all you.
kidding. I was totally
There's another
guessing
one.
pound. I don't, a tic-tac-toe
You got
board.
another
I have no
guess?
idea what else you would call it.
Tic-tac-toe board. All right, give up. The answer
Yeah,
is
I got no guess.
Octothorpe.
Oh, I never would have
Octothorpe.
got that. Never would have got that in a million
Octo
years. Okay.
what?
Totally.
Yeah.
Octothorpe.
Octothorpe. Oh, come on.
That is the dumbest thing I've ever
I was expecting you to say something, and then I would be like, oh, yeah, I remember hearing that a long time
heard.
ago. But no, not that.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Alrighty. Tyler, this question is for you. Name the first soft drink enjoyed in space.
I imagine it's got to be one of the big brands who paid enough to sponsor something to get it drank. It's got to be Coca-Cola.
Correct. You
Good
are
job.
correct.
Yeah.
You've got a point. You're on
Mm-hmm. There you
the
go.
board, Tyler.
Rack them
Yeah, I mean,
I'm
that's a very easy question, but I'm glad you got it.
Oh, Zach. Yeah. Okay. Neptune. I'll just call
Neptune,
you
he knows.
Neptune from now on, Eric.
All right. That's,
Alrighty.
all right.
The score
We
is
can't end
two
in
to
a tie.
one.
All
Eric is
right.
winning 2-1.
Cool. All right, cool. Good.
Thank you, Val.
Mercy call.
I hope you're okay with me calling you Val, Valerie. Thank you for participating.
She
I
said
appreciate it.
RC Cola. There's like maybe 10 people on the planet that remember RC Cola. Sorry, Valerie. And I'm one of them, so.
Alrighty. This is odd. So this is for Eric. Name the only two countries in the world where you cannot buy Coca-Cola.
Wow. Hard question. Okay. I'm going to say Russia and Brazil.
Incorrect. Tyler, you
All
want to give it a
right.
shot?
Tyler, you got this?
No, I don't have it. I just knew you were wrong. Zimbabwe and Vatican City.
Incorrect. The two countries are North Korea and Cuba.
Oh, that
Yeah,
makes
that makes
sense.
sense.
Yeah,
Okay.
totally. Okay. We should have got
Should have
that.
known that one.
Alrighty, Tyler, this one's for you. You are behind by 1 point.
Not for
So if
long.
you get this one, you'll tie, and then we can go to the
See.
bonus round. What does ZIP stand for? Like zip code. ZIP. As he Googles
My Google Foo's not even good enough. Nope. I tried to cheat and I can't even cheat. I got nothing.
Eric, you want to
Pass.
guess? You didn't even have a guess?
Zone industrial planning.
You're close. You're
I should
close. It's
have a point
actually
for that.
zone improvement plan.
I was so close, so close. Did
Oh
I get
my
that?
gosh, you were
I
so
would give that to
close.
Tyler if you said that. No, I don't get it. It's a fair. I
I
lost
won't
it.
give
Sorry.
it to you, but that
No.
was
All right.
very freaking
It was
close.
close, right? All right, good. All right, cool.
All
Zone approval
right.
planning. Got it. Yep.
That makes Eric the
You want to
winner,
do?
right?
No, I didn't get
Yes. No. You're up
two
two
to
to
one.
one.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So
Okay.
that
Oh,
pretty
that was
much,
okay. Great.
that was the last question.
That
Yeah,
was
it's
the
a question.
question. She said, I
Perfect.
needed
All
that to go
right.
into
Yeah.
overtime. See how she sets this up? She gives me all the super hard questions, and then she's like, oh, he's down one. Let's give him a wicked hard question so that he can't make it into overtime.
Yeah, well, you
And then
know.
I wonder why I lose
I tried
every
to
week.
give you a hint before the question didn't even say zip code. I
Yep.
tried to give you a hint there, zip code.
Well, it doesn't really matter because at the end
It's
of the day, Eric actually was close enough to get a half a point there anyways. He freaking killed it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, that pretty much wraps.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Eric, for joining us today. Really appreciate your time, your expertise, and just an overall really enjoyable conversation.
I had a
Yeah,
blast as well. Thanks
absolutely.
for all the great trivia questions, Tyler. Thanks for letting me win. And yeah, it was great. Great time.
I didn't let
Awesome.
you win, but
Well,
Eric, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really enjoyed having you. At the end of every show, I just take great pleasure in kicking the person who beat me in trivia off the show. So, Tyler, get him off my show.
no, wait.
Get him. All right.
so
Ashley,
perfect.
he's good. He's good. He's good.
Yeah, that was awesome. Okay, everybody, thank you. Valerie, thank you for joining us today. Aditya, thank you for joining us today. Really, really appreciate all of you engaging with us on the chat. Our next episode will be in 2 weeks, so that will be October 18th. And you will see both of us there, and our guest is TBD. So you
Keep an eye on
will
our socials.
watch
We'll
us.
announce the guest as soon as we know it. Please smash likes. Please smash follows. Please smash all the smashy, smash them things that you can smash. Smash them because we need it. We need the followers. We need to feel like you love us, like Valerie
Yes.
Apperson loves us. So please click all the buttons and do all the things. And Ashley, thank you for another wonderful episode of Cyber Therapy.
Thank you for co-hosting with me. Appreciate you.